nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. Welcome to part two of our show. We're back at you here. It's a little bit after 11 o'clock Central Time, live on June 17, 2020. Patrick Timpone and OneRadioNetwork.com. And we're going to delve into the world of political finance. Whoa, lots going on. Brandon Smith is here. He's kind of a rock star in this field. AltMarket.com is a very popular website. It's alt-market.com. He's been doing this for the last 10 years, been writing on finance and such for about 14 years, Brandon Smith. And we're going to just say hello, Mr. Smith. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, your life has got to be just fun with what's going on today.
Oh, I don't know if it's fun. It's definitely interesting.
Yeah, many people are saying this is the big one, whatever that means. What do you think?
I guess it depends on your definition, but yeah, I would say that's probably, for me, is the big one. So.
And so what would your definition be of the big one?
Well, my definition would be what the global elites or the globalists would call the Great Economic Reset, or the Global Economic Reset, which means a complete shift in the way we see the economy, the way we interact in the economy. A lot of things are going to change, and I would say mostly for the worse.
So you're saying that there are forces, Brandon, out there, I don't want to put words in your mouth, you correct me, that want to remold the entire dollar, banking, everything?
Oh, absolutely, and they've been talking about it openly for years. In fact, I'm putting out an article either today or tomorrow about the World Economic Forum. They basically just came out and said their meeting, their next big meeting in January of 2021 is even called the Great Reset.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Yes.
So what does that mean, really, reset? A revaluing currencies, or?
Well, they're very ambiguous about it, but from their white papers and from some of the things they've said in the past, I mean, the term sort of came up back in around 2014. Christine Lagarde, the former head of the IMF, started talking about it pretty frequently back in 2014. And her sort of definition was a complete, it's what her push was, basically, was for total centralization or total global centralization of our economic systems. And what that means is nation states no longer have any independence. They're, you know, through globalism, we already have a lot of interdependency, which has caused us a lot of problems. Of course, they blame that on, you know, free market capitalism. They'll blame it on capitalism, but it's really more of like a total socialization of the economy. And I think, and especially in their white papers, basically the goal is a one world currency and eventually through that, a one world government.
Hmm. So let's go back to Brandon Smith, the World Economic Forum. Who are the who's behind this thing?
Well, when I talk about globalists, these are people who are very open about a particular ideology of promoting a one-world system. And generally, they're not very hidden, especially not these days. If you were to go back maybe 10, 14 years when I started, they were much more obscure. And when you talked about a globalist, it was considered, that idea was considered a conspiracy theory. Now it's completely open. They talk about their plans all the time, especially one world currency system, digital currency system, and cashless societies. This is their, number one goal right now. and the institutions that promote these things are filled with these people. You look at the IMF, the Bank for International Settlements, the World Bank, the CFR. there's a number of them that discuss these issues quite openly. It's not a conspiracy theory anymore. It's conspiracy reality or conspiracy fact.
Do the same people, Brandon Smith, control the euro and the dollar?
Well, yes.
Okay.
To the extent that almost every central bank in the world is a member of the Bank for International Settlements, or the BIS.
Mm-hmm.
And through the BIS, they control or dictate the policy of all of these central banks. So when you see multiple central banks around the world acting in unison to enact a particular policy or a particular push towards a certain direction, that's not coincidence. They all go to the BIS, they get their marching orders, and then they all do what they're told. So when people say, for instance, when people accuse the Federal Reserve of being sort of the leader or the...
The real evil ones.
Right? The top of the pyramid. Right. They're actually not. They're just the middlemen.
So the Bank of International Settlements, they would pull the strings on the European Central Bank, the Federal Reserve Bank, Bank of Japan, and German, and the rest of them.
Right. They set policy, and then there's people that are ostensibly above them. There's globalists in the global think tanks, and like the CFR or Tavistock. You have the World Economic Forum. You have all these different institutions that sort of those are the people that are behind the scenes, kind of dictating how these middlemen act.
And these people, would these be like the J.P. Morgan, their whole blue blood, real old money, the Rothschilds? Is that what you're talking about, these folks?
Absolutely, okay. Yes, the old money. Yes.
The old money. And they've been in power for a long time?
Well, as far as we can tell, at least centuries, yes.
Centuries? Whoa.
Yes.
Wow. So if they control the dollar and the euro, which is most of the economic activity anyway, why would they need a one-world currency?
Well, it's more about psychology or mass psychology. I think the goal is to, number one, you have to understand the psychology of these people. They are basically what is called narcopaths.
Narcopaths?
Narcissistic sociopaths.
Oh, great.
Or you might call them psychopaths. But the term nowadays is narcopaths, and... what you have to understand is that a narcopath craves a lot of things. Mostly they crave adoration. They see themselves as superior to the rest of the people around them, to other human beings. They believe themselves to be anointed, and they desire what you could only describe as godhood. They desire to be gods, or gods on earth at least. And much like royalty or pharaohs, that sort of thing in history. And these people exist today. They also, actually do organize as long as there's mutual gain to be had, and they have done this for, centuries. And the goal of total centralization, I think, in terms of purpose,
mm-hmm.
would be to get the public to actively support the idea that they are the anointed ones. They are gods on earth. That's what they want. They want people to willingly go along with this idea. And it's not enough for them to just force us at gunpoint to accept a new world order. It's not enough for them to, collapse the economy and simply build a new world order without our permission. What they want is for us to beg for a new world order. They want us to, because if they can do that, if they can get the public to beg for this one world system, then there will never be any rebellion against it, or probably not any rebellion against it, because we asked for it, right? Yeah. And they can always say, well, this is what you asked for, and this is what you're getting. You wanted us to save you, and we gave you what you wanted. Here's your one world system. That's what they want. They want a system that could last for 1,000 years with them in power, and no one ever questions it because they think that they're the ones that asked for it and thought of it.
So you're arguing that there's a real bloodline kind of goes way back with kings and Bank of England and that whole crowd in the Vatican, and they want to have their great-great-grandchildren continue on.
Yes, to a point. I don't think that they necessarily only recruit due to,
blood
genetics.
Yeah.
I think that what they look for is other narcopaths, and specifically other narcopaths who have a certain, intelligence level and affinity for their ideology. So what I would really call it, globalism or the globalists, I would call it a cult of narcopaths that recruits other narcopaths over time.
So can it be argued that this idea of we want you to get to the point where you need a vaccine and you want a vaccine?
Absolutely, yes. That is the goal. That the goal is for you to ask for your own slavery, to feel as if you are safer, that they actually saved you through slavery.
That really is a strange psychology. I mean, you call it narcopath. So it's not about the money. I mean, right, these people create money on a computer. It's not about money.
No, not at all. The money is just a means to an end. It's a tool or a power mechanism, and the money changes all the time. World reserve currencies rise and they fall in relatively short periods of time. So, the idea, for example, that the U.S. dollar is somehow a key to the power structure of the globalists, this is simply not true. It's just a tool, and they'll use the dollar, and when it's not useful to them anymore, they'll throw it away, and they'll replace it with something different. And the IMF, for example, is already talking about a global digital currency system, which they plan to use to replace the dollar.
So people would go in and trade their USDs for a digital global currency. That kind of an idea.
Theoretically, yes. Mm-hmm. Either you would trade your dollars in, or maybe your dollars are completely worthless at that point, and you're just begging for any kind of currency. So.
Oh, that wouldn't be good. That would be ugly. That would be ugly. So, Brandon Smith is with us, altmarket.com. So, there's many people out there, Brandon Smith, that are arguing in some very unusual and frankly surprisingly places that President Trump is a white hat guy. He's the hero here. He's holding this whole thing together. Without him, the financial thing would be really in the toilet. What's your take?
Well, I guess pretty much right after he got into office, I have been disagreeing with that position, because I predicted he would win the election pretty adamantly all the way up through 2016, when a lot of people said there was no chance that Hillary was the chosen one. There was no chance that Trump would get in, and everything would be rigged in favor of Hillary. And I said, no, that's not necessarily the case, because when you, if your plan is to collapse the economy, it may be good to have a supposed conservative in the White House, so that way you can lay all the blame for the economic collapse on conservatives and the conservative ideal or conservative principles. You can drop that whole thing in the lap of conservatives and say, look what they did, look at what these nationalists and free market people did. They destroyed the world. You know, even though it was the central banks who had, you know, staged this collapse 4 years beforehand, most people in the public won't understand that. They don't understand economics, the nuances of it. They don't understand central banking and how easy it is to scientifically engineer an economic crisis. So with Trump in, it actually is a huge benefit to the globalists to do that. Now, my position in 2016, before the election, was I didn't know if Trump would be aware of this plan or not. I couldn't prove it one way or the other. I just said, well, let's wait and see what he does. Let's see who he surrounds himself with in his cabinet. Hmm. And we found out real quick after he got into the White House where he stood. At least in my opinion, he surrounded himself with at least two dozen members of the Council on Foreign Relations. He brought in, tons of Goldman Sachs guys like Mnuchin. He brought in Pompeo. He had, Bolton in there for a while, and now there's this little soap opera between him and Bolton. But, other than Bolton, you know, which a lot of people will try to hold up as an example, see, they're after Trump. I think it's just kabuki theater, because he still has dozens of elites surrounding him and his cabinet. And the biggest one would be Wilbur Ross, his commerce secretary. Wilbur Ross is a Rothschild banking agent, the same Rothschild banking agent that arranged to bail Trump out of his massive debts in at least four separate properties in Atlantic City back in the 90s. The Rothschilds saved Trump from pretty egregious bankruptcy in the 90s, and they've kind of owned him ever since. And, you know, who was the first guy that he brought in when he became president? It was Wilbur Ross. So, in my opinion, I think that especially a president, whoever a president surrounds himself with, that says a lot about who he owes. And he's surrounded by globalists.
Hmm, interesting. And many people believe then he is the answer to globalism. And he argues that as well.
Oh, sure. Right? Yeah, I mean, it there's a term for it. It's called controlled opposition. And I think that's exactly what Trump is.
Controlled opposition. Brandon Smith is with. Tell folks about the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, and how key they are. And you say that President Trump appointed many people from the CFR in there.
Right. Well, the Council on Foreign Relations is basically what they call a roundtable group. It's an extension of other, you know, roundtable groups that existed in London for many years beforehand. But the CFR is sort of the American version of the London roundtable groups. And the roundtable groups are made up of global elites who are all pushing for the erasure of national sovereignty. They don't like the idea of nation states and borders. They want everything to be a one world system, and they openly admit this. They've admitted it for many decades, and they're actively push to sabotage national borders and nationalism, and promote a one world system. That's their goal.
But President Trump has been opposite of that with the wall and everything. So that doesn't kind of tie in, does it? If he's got these guys
on
board?
Sure. In rhetoric, he is against all these things, and of course he would be. You know, if you're staging controlled opposition or a kabuki theater, you would have your guy attack globalism or attack the idea of open borders, but then you would have him fail. You would have him fail miserably, and that's what's happening now. And this is what I've said predicted for many years, that this is what would happen, that Trump would oversee the fall of America, that he would oversee the fall of the U.S. economy, that he would see massive civil unrest, and that he would probably eventually institute martial law, which would be the final nail in the coffin for conservatives, because as conservatives, in order to be a conservative, you have to, number one, you have to believe in small government. Number two, you have to believe in individual liberty. You cannot support the idea, and number three, you have to believe in the Constitution. So you can't support totalitarianism in any form to be a conservative. And once you do, you've lost. You've completely lost the culture war, or whatever you want to call it. You've made yourself into the bad guy. And I think that's what they want. They want us, Trump is sort of a Pied Piper to lure us into supporting a totalitarian system. Wow.
So, and you can imagine an ego with the size of Trump would go with this and be the fall guy, so to speak?
Absolutely. And I hear that a lot, that, well, Trump's ego would never allow him to take orders from people. But I don't know if any of these people know Trump personally. There are many people with egos who still take orders from people above them because if they don't, they have a lot to lose. So I don't see ego as some kind of barrier to being a puppet for the elites.
So you're arguing that President Trump, contrary to conventional wisdom, was not a surprise.
As far as becoming president?
Becoming president, right.
No, I mean, you can go back to my articles in June of 2016, May, June, where I said, outright that Trump will be president. I said it over and over again, and I was attacked pretty frequently for the idea. People said I was an idiot. There's no way. No chance, zero chance that Clinton was the chosen one, and I would look like a moron in 2016. By the end of 2016, I would look like a moron. Of course, the exact opposite happened.
And why were you so sure at the time?
It seemed like the most effective strategy for the elites at the time, either to allow Trump to get in simply by not interfering with the elections, which they have been known to do. Generally, when you have such a close split, 51-49, 52-48, when you start getting that kind of close split, it's easy to manipulate an election by shifting a few votes one way or the other to get that, to change that split.
Hmm. Brandon, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Brandon Smith is with us, Alt Market. Brandon, stay right there. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to dig into some of the real nitty-gritty and the real particulars with what's going on with debt, with the national debt, with the stock markets, with money printing, and what that might possibly be for you who are using Federal Reserve notes, which is what we got at the moment. So there, and we're going to talk to him about his ideas on crypto and a lot of stuff. So stay right there. Patrick Timpone, One Radio Network. This is on sale right now, this offer. Previously with research scientist at MIT, Stephanie Seneff, PhD, and the curious connections between these glyphosates, Roundup, GMOs, and sulfur.
So if you simply put the glyphosate in place of the glycine in the sulfur transferase, you will not be able to get the sulfate from the cholesterol sulfate to some other molecule, such as the heparin sulfate, the cell won't be able to defend itself with sulfate if it can't put the sulfate there. But it's really, really important to be able to do that because, for example, cholesterol sulfate, it delivers sulfate to the cells. But in order to deliver it, you've got to take the sulfate off of the cholesterol and put it on something else. And that's what where the sulfotransferase would come in and wouldn't be able to do that.
I know, gets a little geeky, but the point is that without the proper amount of sulfur in the body, and now it's being disrupted because of the GMOs, even more than what it was already doing, it's not good. So we think that this sulfur product that we've been promoting is really helping people to keep everything kind of working well, because this whole sulfur cycle is kind of God's way of keeping the bad guys out and exiting the body. And because our sulfur is absolutely pure with no additives, it's different from almost all the other ones out there. You can click an order, three prices, right on our website, oneradionetwork.com. Yes, indeed. And 20%, that's the first time we've had in a long time that they wanted to do a little sale. We said, yeah, we'll get involved with that. 20% off on the sulfur, I think, through the end of June. And just go on our website, One Radio Network, and you'll see the new prices right there. Speaking of a sale, colostrum, big sale. Here's a previous conversation we had with Dr. Anthony Kleinschmidt, who formulates Sirthrival colostrum that's on sale right now. The colostrum, why is it anti-aging, Dr. Kleinschmidt?
Oh, take a look at all of the anti-aging components that are there, Patrick, and literally it's HGH on steroids, but it's all natural. Because you have not just one or two of those natural growth factors, you have the entire IGF-1 superfamily.
So HGH, we know, works, but there are some downsides. And you say this is a cleaner, more efficient, effective way to get anti-aging properties with the colostrum?
Absolutely, because it keeps everything intact and all natural. Where HGH is a synthetic, the IGF-1 superfamily from our colostrum is all natural, and you're getting all of the cofactors to keep everything in balance.
It is a great time to buy colostrum for the first time or to get some more if you're a regular user. Here's a promo code to use, We Initial R Immune. We Initial R Immune. Use this and get 20% off on all colostrum products. Click and order through OneRadioNetwork.com. The big sale going on now through the 3rd of July. We have probably the best line of oils ever in the history of the planet. I'm not exaggerating. There's this fellow, Andres, he was sick. He was a gold medal fellow in Germany. And, they gave him all kinds of stuff so he could win. You know, they do that. And pretty much destroyed his gut. And he really saved himself with some pure, flaxseed oil that his neighbor would grind up for him, make this oil, and that's pretty much how he got out of the hospital. He said, I never would have got out of the hospital. So after that, he really started researching oils, and he figured out a way, and you know how the German mind works, you know, the people that build these really the best cars ever, right? They're really into doing things the best they can. He has Andreas seed oils. These are effective, the world's most effective seed oils. We can get things like pumpkin seed oil, coriander seed oil, black cumin seed oil, very, very powerful, sunflower, hemp seed oil, and the way he is able to make oils out of them, virtually zero oxidation. And we know oxidation is a big deal with oils. And these are all in Myron glass, and he figured it out, how to do it with a very little friction and very little temperature, which is the cause of oxidation in oils. So that's why you don't want to get an oil at the supermarket with a clear glass bottle. It's just, very, very dangerous in our opinion. So these are great oils. These are Andreas seed oils. You can see them on our website, OneRadioNetwork.com. Click an order and just Google some of the uses, like for black cumin seed. And there, it goes back for 100 years of using cumin seed. Everything from cancer cells, pumpkin seed guys for prostate. Magical. These are great oils. The only oils we recommend, most oils, God love them, they're just not, they're rancid. You know, they just are the way they do them. Cold pressed, none of that means anything. Andreas seed oils, probably the best in the world, the way he makes them, on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Know the source. One Radio Network.
We're talking with Brandon Smith, who's kind of a rock star in the whole geopolitical financial world. How'd you get so famous and popular? I mean, you've been a contrarian for a long time, right? I mean, you've been kind of against the leaning against the wind for a long time, haven't you?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know if I'd say I'm a rock star, but I've maintained, I've been consistent, and I've stayed around for a long time, I think, because I have been consistent, and a lot of my predictions have
come true.
Proven true over the years. So.
And what's this fascination with the insight and to really back up a lot of things you're saying with the psyche of these people? I mean, has that been interesting to you for a long time when you first started digging into this?
Oh, yes. I mean, I probably started studying into psychology and mass psychology when I was 19, 20.
Huh.
And mainly through, there was a psychologist by the name of Carl Jung,
yeah,
who was sort of the, I would say the master of that realm. And he was sort of ostracized by the rest of the psychological community at the time, still sort of is today. Mainline psychiatry thinks it still considers Jung a joke, but he was one of the only people in that field to really cure a lot of ailments, including schizophrenia, which they still claim is incurable. But a lot of his insights sort of inspired me to get into that field a little bit, and it's really helpful in understanding, I think. It's really the key to everything, I think, to understanding the globalists and what they are and what they want. When you start to look at the behaviors and the character traits of narcissists and sociopaths, you really start to see a lot of correlations between those people and globalists and globalism. Everything that they, you know, all of their behavior, everything that they push for, all their desires and the things that they want match almost exactly with what narcopaths want.
So
the only difference would be that they are organized to get those things.
Organized. So, and then in a position of power, I guess, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So when we talk about the economy, isn't the economy, though, just really people going to work? If we are all willing to go to work, I mean, no matter what the stock market does, can't we, the people, keep the thing going without it crashing?
Well, there's a lot of issues as far as being able to go to work. Number one, you have the pandemic situation and the, you know, potential for reoccurring lockdowns.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of businesses may be ordered to shut down. Now, they could potentially rebel and stay open, but there's some risk there. And there's a lot of people who just don't want to take risks. So that can affect the economy. There's also the issue of debt. And we are at a time now in American history where we're in more debt than we ever have been before, on a national level, on the consumer level, and on the corporate level, where we're at historic highs for debt. And when you have the system sort of becoming unstable or breaking down, and you have people with massive amount of debt on their shoulders, eventually something breaks. And that's kind of what's happening now. I think we're seeing it, especially in the small business sector. We saw, when they put out the small business bailouts, it was almost as if they were laughing at people, because only about 13 to 18% of small businesses actually got a loan through the small business bailout.
Is that right? Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, I think J.P. Morgan had something like 300,000 applicants for the small business loans, and of course the government was using the major banks as middlemen for these bailout loans. And only 13 13 to 18,000 actually received a loan out of 300,000 applicants. And a good number of those that actually got a loan were not even small businesses. Some of them were major corporations. You can see how the system is kind of being rigged. And I think what they're doing is they're killing, they're trying to kill the small business sector first, because that's a big part of jobs in the U.S. About 50% of jobs in the U.S. are through small businesses. So, you know, even if you want, even if every American wanted to go to work, there may not be jobs for them except for, you know, part-time or very low-wage jobs, which just isn't going to sustain the economy.
So, Brendan Smith, why is the Dow at 26,000 today?
I'm sorry, I missed the question.
Why is the Dow at 26,000 today?
Oh, well, number one, so let's be clear, the Dow and stock markets are in no way a reflection of the real economy, and they haven't been for at least a decade. So no matter what the Dow does, that doesn't mean if the Dow could go to 40,000, it doesn't matter. It's not a reflection of the actual economy and whether or not things are healthy. The reason for this is because when the federal dollar pumps money into the system through stimulus or inflates the dollar, naturally you're going to get some of that money flowing into stocks. And we used to see that, I would say, you know, for about 6 years after the crash of 2008, we would see that pretty frequently. It was, you know, a sure thing almost that the stock market was going to go up as long as the Fed was stimulating. And that was because a lot of that stimulus money was going into corporations, which were then using it for, not for expanding their business or creating new jobs. They were using it to buy back, what they call buy back, their own stocks. And what stock buybacks do is they reduce the number of stock shares on a particular market and then make the ones that are left more valuable. And that's how they have artificially pumped up the stock market for many years. Now, I think this is actually going to come to an end very soon. The other day, we saw an almost $2,000 dump of, yes, of stocks in a single day. And I think this is going to become the norm. Right now, I think that the system is on the verge of complete breakdown, including stocks, and you have what they call day traders or retail traders, smaller traders who are you know, a little bit oblivious to everything that's going on, and they're jumping into the market thinking, well, it worked for years. The Fed stimulated and stocks just kept going up, so I'm going to get in on this action and I'm going to make money. But I think what's going to happen is what happened in Weimar Germany, you know, in the 1920s, which was they inflated their currency, a lot of money went into stocks, but then stocks crashed anyway.
Is it fair to say that there's been about $4 or $5 trillion new dollars printed at the New York Fed since the beginning of the year, in that range?
Yeah, I've heard different estimates from like 2.5 to 2.5 trillion to around 4
Well, their
trillion.
Balance sheet, I'm looking at their balance sheet right now, and it says right here they've got, I think they've purchased 2.5 trillion treasuries.
Right.
You know, in the last, what, three? And that's money that we, the people, are going to pay back to the bankers who created the money. That's a interesting game. So that's what you're talking about, to tell people what stimulus is. So the Federal Reserve Bank can create the dollars on a computer, and then they're buying assets, right? And they're buying treasury bonds. And did they just announce, Brendan, that they're going to be buying corporate debt now?
Yes, yes. And that's, I think they know that the ship is sinking anyway, and what they're doing now is simply pretending like they're trying to save it, but they know. They know it can't be saved. They made sure that it can't be saved through the creation of this massive debt bubble.
So, but you were arguing that they don't want it to be saved, right?
That this- I don't think they do. Okay. Looking at what the globalist agenda is, it serves their interests to not save the system, to eventually allow it to crash completely. But they can't. They have to divert blame. They have to make it look like they're trying to fix it. And then, you know, events completely out of their control, like the pandemic, for example, caused the crash, not them. Mm-hmm. Or conservatives caused the crash through Trump. You know, there's always a scapegoat for them. But this has been staged for, you know, well before even the crash of 2008, this current crash. This bubble has been building for many years. It's something that in the alternative field we call it the everything bubble.
Everything bubble. So you have written about that the 2008 thing was a controlled demolition, right? The Great Recession.
Yes, it's my belief, according to the evidence, that
it was deliberate, and things have not really changed since then, and just built up. The bubble's gotten bigger.
Yeah, they made it even worse, and now when the bubble back then, it involved you know, derivatives, debt, and real estate. Now the bubble encompasses absolutely everything, including the dollar itself. So when this bubble collapses, we will more than likely we will lose our currency, or at the very least, the dollar will lose its world reserve status.
Why would it collapse, though, if you just... It would only collapse if you run out of zeros, right?
No. I mean, that's what... I've heard that argument, too, and it's never... Never in history has a nation been able to save itself through inflation. And that includes Weimar Germany. And that includes stock markets. They had inflated... trillions upon trillions, and they still suffered a massive collapse and their stock market collapse.
But can it be argued that Weimar was an internal combustion and they couldn't, it was all in Germany, Brandon, with the dollar. They were able to put dollars out everywhere around the world, and you can create a lot of new ones without it causing a problem for a long time.
Well, what happened with Germany is they were sort of a de facto reserve currency system at the time as well, and what happened was all of these different nations stopped accepting currency and stopped accepting stopped buying their treasuries, buying their debt. And so when that happened, that's when they really took a dive, and I believe that is what's going to happen to us, and specifically with China, who is a major debt holder of the U.S., and you see the conflict building between the U.S. and China, and all they really have to do is simply dump the dollar as a world reserve and say they're not going to accept it anymore and they're not going to buy U.S. treasuries anymore. And a lot of other nations, I believe, will follow their lead and dump the dollar as well. They're the biggest importer-exporter in the world. They're one of the biggest manufacturers in the world. And if they say they're not accepting dollars, then a lot of other nations will switch.
Oh, so they could be part of the plan to say, we just want yuan for whatever we're selling you. We don't want dollars, just like a lot of the countries are doing now with the oil, which used to be taboo, but they seem to be getting away with it more and more, oil producers.
Or they'll switch to a basket currency system, which I think is the bigger plan. I think that's why that's why China joined the IMF's special drawing rights system. I think that the plan is to eventually have a basket currency system that moves away from the dollar as world reserve. And really, the U.S. economy is completely dependent on the dollar mechanism as world reserve. If we lose that status, our economy takes a massive dive in a number of ways.
So I'm a little confused on the Trump thing. Let's go back to the election and the stock market. So if we call him the globalist, or Trump is doing it part of the plan, why would they allow the market to really dump, which he has put a lot of his fortunes in, to possibly get him unelected in November?
Well, I don't know that their goal is to get him unelected in November. They may want him for another 4 years.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
We're not, it's a long ways till November. So I'm starting to even question if we're going to have elections at all in November.
Really?
Just with the way things are going, yes. If the current trend continues, if they have, you know, pandemic lockdowns, if there's civil unrest, there could be a complete breakdown before November.
Well, you talk about a revolution in the streets. That would be massive if there's no election, right? If they postpone it. Whew.
Yeah, it would be complete chaos. Yeah.
Yeah, complete chaos. And that would benefit the New World Order people that want to just reset this whole thing?
Well, if the goal is to get people to beg for martial law.
That's right. Go back to it, right?
Yes.
Go back
then,
to
yes.
That's really strange when you think about it, this idea that these people, allegedly, as you are arguing, really want people to beg or ask for help.
Well, I think it makes sense if you understand how narcopaths think. Generally, they're very manipulative people, and in a lot of cases, you'll find that people who are around a narcopath, just in regular life, in their personal life, they'll find that they end up sort of trapped with these people, and in a lot of times, they think it's their idea. they think that they wanted it or they asked for it. And then once they start to understand what the person is, they look back at all these incidences and interactions with the narcopath in their life, and they realize, wait a minute, that was staged. This person manipulated me into sort of trapping myself into this situation. And if you take that small, like, microcosm and you apply it to into the bigger picture, into globalists, they're very adept at manipulating people into thinking that, or into asking for slavery, into asking to be trapped, and that's what I think is going on. And the reason they do this is because if you think you asked for the situation, you're less likely to rebel against it.
Hmm. So if the corona thing is part of this whole plan, that would entail an incredibly all planned out plandemic.
Well, at the very least, they would have to, yes, and they would have to simulate the outcomes beforehand and have, yes, a plan beforehand, which they actually did.
It wasn't that 2001, or what do they call that?
Event 201.
Event 201, yes. Tell folks what that was.
Which was held a couple months before the actual pandemic happened, and the simulation, Event 201, was a simulation of a coronavirus pandemic that starts in China, but started in South America. And if you look at the outcomes of that simulation and the solutions that they came up with, it's basically everything they're trying to apply right now, including immunity passports, lockdowns, tracking apps, contact tracers, which are basically informants that rat on you if you don't do what you're supposed to be doing. And also, one of the solutions they came up with was a one-world financial institution that would divvy out money to fix particular problems or to handle all the financial problems associated with the pandemic. So everything that they sort of came up with in the simulation is starting to happen now in the real thing. And the only thing we haven't quite seen yet is them suggesting this one-world financial institution, which I think is maybe 6 months down the road.
Really, that soon? You're arguing it could happen.
I'm sorry.
One world kind of a digital thing. That soon.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. At least the initial stages of it, and I've long suspected that the digital currencies and blockchain currencies like Bitcoin are sort of a beta test for that, the global.
So how would our listeners around the world profit or protect themselves from this event what you're arguing is true in 6 months and there's some kind of a Fed coin or whatever they're going to call it?
Well, in terms of finance, there's always, the tried and true. There's precious metals like gold and silver, which are, holding their value pretty well. And I think will, spike a lot in the next 6 months. So there's that option. But in terms of, I think people need to start thinking about base survival. And if you're really going to survive this thing, you need to start thinking in terms of, do you have necessities? Can you produce necessities for yourself? Can you grow your own food? Do you make something that's necessary that people would be willing to trade with you, barter with you? Do you have a means of self-defense? And the biggest thing is, do you have community? Are there people that you can organize with for mutual aid, to build a local economy? Are you able to protect each other? That's really going to be the biggest factor as far as, are people going to get through this or not?
So do you think there's going to be more leniency with the mortgage companies with forbearance like they're doing now? A mortgage company gives people 3 month rest, right, during April, May, and June, and they may do more. And some landlords, but not a lot. Or would they get really tough and let people lose their homes? I mean, where would these people go? That'd be real anarchy, wouldn't it?
Well, that's hard to say. Think my theory is that they will give people more leeway and make them feel safe, and that they'll pull the rug out sometime towards the end of this year. So I think they'll be more lenient for now, and then through circumstances out of their control, quote unquote,
right,
they will have to become tougher on people, and that's really when things will start to get rough, is when people start realizing that the poverty that's coming is more long-term, that it might be permanent.
Sean writes in an email for Bannon Smith. Well, he seems to think there's been hundreds of thousands of indictments since Trump has been in office in the Department of Justice. Do you see that? I mean, I see that a lot on the internet, but I've not seen any evidence of that, or have you seen evidence of that?
No, that comes from the sort of the, what do they call it, the Q?
Yeah, the Q thing, the Q thing.
The
yeah.
Q thing, and I have not, almost everything that Q, whoever Q is, it's probably a group of people, almost everything that Q puts out proves to be false. And a lot of their predictions have ended up not happening, and then they just move on to the next prediction. And I think people desperately want to believe that Trump is like a hero on a white horse. He's the guy that's going to save them. And I'm here to tell you, Trump is not going to save you. He's not going to drain the swamp. He's not going to arrest the bankers. It's not going to happen. He's surrounded by them daily. He works with them daily. They are in the White House. Most likely he takes his marching orders from the people around him. So don't expect Trump to be your hero. I think if you're looking for a hero, look in the mirror. You are the person that needs to save yourself. Don't look to a politician to do it for you.
Here's an email from Lyndon. What does Brandon think about Trump saying that people didn't need to take out their required minimum distribution this year, which they are supposed to take out at 70 years of age, also extending taking out the RMD for 2 years if people want to just let the money accumulate? Just curious, in Michigan. What's an RMD? What is that?
That's news to me. I'm not familiar with that.
I am not either. Here's another email. What can one do to survive and possibly thrive through this demolition? Is there a path to maintain, preserve sovereignty, individuality, freedom? We know what followed Weimar. Is that our necessary fate?
Well, that's a loaded question. you could talk for another couple hours on that, but I would say, as I said before, I think there is a way to get through this, and there is a way to, I do think these people, I want to be clear, I do think these people, in the long run, they will lose. And I think they will lose because human beings have an inherent affinity for freedom. And we will find a way to maintain our freedom, and I think a lot of people are willing to fight for that freedom, especially not even just for themselves, but for their families and for future generations, for their children. So I'm very familiar with the psychology of these people, and they do make mistakes. They do have hubris and arrogance, and they tend to think that they are invincible when they're not. And the way in which you start to beat these people is you become independent from them. You start to provide your own necessities. You become more self-sufficient, and you start to organize communities around, you know, local self-sufficiency and local self-defense, and then you build from there. And I think if a lot of communities do this, if you have thousands of communities across the country doing this, this makes the job of the globalists very, very difficult. Because if you're not reliant on the mainstream system, then they can't really control you or frighten you into asking for, you know, a totalitarian system or martial law. You're already self-sufficient. You already have your own protection and security. What do you need them to protect you for? So then it gets to the point where they either have to leave you alone and let you do your thing, or they have to come after you with force. And once they do that, then they sort of expose themselves. They have to put their feet on the ground, as it were, and then you basically have to fight back.
What about folks with most of their fortune, so to speak, retirement accounts and such, in the market in 401ks, as most people are in equities? I mean, are they on thin ice here, do you think?
Yes, it depends on what your 401k is invested in, and there are options. You can shift a 401k or an IRA into a precious metals-based IRA, which is an option, and I think that could be much safer in terms of, you know, 6 months down the road. I don't think the stock market is going to hold out. So that's an option. You can also cash out on your 401k and take the penalty, which, you know, that's really up to your personal circumstances. I'm not a financial advisor, so I'm not going to tell people exactly what to do with their money. I'm just saying that's an option.
Yeah, just leads us into this question from Marcia. What does Brandon think about cash, dollars in the bank or under the mattress?
That's a very weird situation right now, because what we are starting to see is a push to for a lot of these countries to go cashless. And we haven't seen it as much in the U.S., but in Europe and in, you know, places like China, they're pushing that real hard. They're starting to shift into a fully digital system. So I think in America for now, I would definitely keep a lot of cash on hand just because the debt situation is so insane with some of these corporations and banks that you could possibly see what they call a bank holiday, where banks shut down and you have no access to your account and the money in your account. That could happen. So I would definitely keep some, at least some cash on hand. And I would also try to keep some precious metals on hand to protect your, the value of your money. And, you know, beyond that, I would have, you know, I'd start looking into prepping if you haven't already and having a lot of necessities on hand.
We're talking with Brandon Smith, altmarket.com. So what is your general feeling on cryptos? There are people that argue that if Bitcoin was really a threat to the dollar, that the dollar boys would have, you know, just shut them down long ago. Two questions. Do you think it's safe, and do you think they can shut it down if they, whoever they are, want?
Well, my view on cryptos is maybe outside the you know, alternative, I guess, the consensus. But here's what I'll say. If your goal is to make money on cryptos, I would say more power to you. If you think you can, then go for it. But don't, I definitely wouldn't treat it as some kind of a tool for revolution against the central banks, mainly because from the behavior I've seen from central banks and the, you know, international banks, is that they love cryptocurrency. They've been pouring all kinds of money into cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin. They've been building all kinds of infrastructure in different cryptocurrencies, you know, setting up trading mechanisms for, you know, the spread of cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. So if they were threatened by it, why are they investing in it? It doesn't make sense to me. Also, if you look at the history of cryptocurrency, you know, the blockchain system and cryptocurrencies in general, you'll see that the NSA has long been involved in digital currency, developing digital currency since at least 1996. Mm. And there's some white papers coming out of the NSA that have been declassified that are rather suspicious. It's when you read their description of a cryptocurrency or a digital currency system, it sounds almost exactly like Bitcoin. So, and of course, the Bitcoin is built on a NSA, you know, hash, a crypto hash. So, I'm just very suspicious of it. You know, I can't prove that they made Bitcoin, but I think that, you know, I've long thought that cryptocurrencies are a beta test for a future one world digital currency.
Is it secure as claimed, where if you get a real wallet off the grid, that nobody can crack it and nobody can steal your little bitcoins?
Yes, but here's the thing: if you're relying on that system for your survival, you know, you can have those coins and their addresses on your wallet. But if you cannot access the internet to trade those coins, then you're going to have to find someone else who has another wallet. And I really think, I mean, less than 1% of people are trading Bitcoin right yeah. now. So your chances of running into, you have way better chance of finding someone who will trade you for gold and silver, or for you know, survival food or ammo, then you know, in a collapse situation, then you're going to find people that will actually want bitcoins.
And folks, you can look at pre 1964 dollars, right, silver dollars, quarters, halves, and you can talk to Fred up at U.S. Coin Capital up there, who's on our show once a month, and you can get those. They call them currency silver, right, Brandon? Currency silver.
Sure, or sometimes junk silver.
Junk silver. Yeah, they'll spend. They'll spend. So do you think that, back to Bitcoin, you know, this great attraction to it has been with folks to say, well, they're only going to ever have 22 or 20 million or whatever Bitcoins, and that's why it's going to be a kabillion dollars someday. Do you think that that's, do you buy into that idea?
Well, they don't, the thing about that is they don't tell you the whole story, or they're not aware of the whole story. Yes, Bitcoin has a limited distribution of coins. However, there's nothing to stop anyone from making their own cryptocurrency that is exactly like Bitcoin. And you know, if you have millions of people making millions of cryptocurrencies, then you there's no limitation in the, you know, the amount of coins being circulated. And really, what makes Bitcoin special? There's really nothing that makes Bitcoin unique or special compared to other cryptocurrencies. The only thing that would maybe make it special is the amount of money being pumped into it by international banks. So, you know, it's really the bankers that choose which coin ends up becoming the dominant coin, because they're the ones building all the infrastructure for it. You know, I don't see it as a viable solution to defeating the banks.
So then it would be possible, if there is big central banking dumping into Bitcoin, that they could dump out of it and lower the price dramatically at their will.
Yes, and that has become a concern in the crypto community, because they're starting to realize that these people they call whales, mm-hmm, will suddenly sell off a massive holding of coins, and the price will plummet. So, and then you could have just a handful of whales basically controlling the price of the whole market.
But you mentioned a couple of things we should talk about before you go. Once again, limited access to the internet. I mean, if that would happen, you know, you're talking about real chaos, right? I mean, the whole thing could just implode.
It, definitely in more in psychological terms, I think people have become very reliant on the web, especially for information. And yes, I think people would definitely freak out if the internet was to be locked down, which can be done. It's been done in other countries before, including China, and in, you know, especially during civil unrest in places like, you know, during the Arab Spring in Egypt, they completely shut off the internet, and you know, people had to bring in, you know, the CIA had to bring in satellite networks and things like that. So yes, the internet can be shut down completely. Don't think it can't, because it can. And then I think probably the most likely scenario is that certain things, the internet will still exist, but not in its current form. A lot of things will be locked out or shut down. Certain sites, probably like my site, and others like my site, will be shut down. And then you'll have sort of this weird veneer of the internet, but it will be only mainstream, sort of codified, accepted sites that are allowed, that you're allowed to go to and see.
There's an incredible amount of dollar-denominated debt, Brandon Smith, right around the world. I at one time knew the number, escaping me at the moment. How would that work if the whole thing just kind of falls apart? I mean, the ties that go into, you know, pension funds and all kinds of things. It would just be, it'd be a disaster, right?
Right. Yeah. If you're talking about global need for dollars,
yes.
And this is a scenario I've actually been talking about for a little while, which is that, you know, the liquidity. If you know, it seems like we're getting to a situation where all of these different nations that have relied on the dollar as a world reserve trading mechanism, if, you know, we get to a point where the debt is so massive that the Fed can never pump enough money into the system to fill the hole, then I think that what they will do, if they can't get enough dollars, is look for a new system. And the IMF has been poised to introduce a new system for several years now.
It may be to the point where I think the phrase is pushing on a string, where the Fed, they're doing a lot of money printing, and there's talk of now more coronavirus rescue stuff. I think President Trump said, what, another $2 trillion or something like that? We're almost to the point where it doesn't seem to matter much what the Fed is printing as far as getting people back to work, as long as the corona thing is in place. It seems like they're fighting against each other.
Well, and that's the thing. I think the Fed and the central banks know that there is no saving the system. They've arranged it to where the ship is sinking at a rate that they can't bail out. They can't bail the water out fast enough. I often compare the Fed to basically a suicide bomber. The Fed has an ideology, and that's what they care about. And their job is to blow up themselves and everything around them in order to make a room, make way for this new ideology to take hold. The Fed knows its time is limited. Their goal is to help bring down the U.S. economy and through that make people desperate for a new system, which the globalists are already setting up as we speak. So, but yeah, I think that, you know, the Fed knows, that time is limited, and really right now, the money that they're putting out is just, a Band-Aid. The amount of debt that's in the system, they'll never be able to fill it.
George writes in, well, if China would sell their treasury bonds, which is over $1 trillion, wouldn't the Federal Reserve just buy them?
Sure, they could. The Fed could buy them, and that's probably exactly
what they'll do. Right?
What they'll do. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing: you're already seeing the effects of this money printing within, you know, on Main Street.
Yes.
If you look at the prices of necessities, if you look at the prices, go to Costco and look at the price of bulk foods. I've noticed in my area the price has doubled on a lot of bulk foods.
Really.
Doubled, yes. And so I think what we're going to see is what is often called stagflation,
yes,
where you see hyperinflation in necessities, and then you see the prices of other things. You see deflation in other things, such as like home prices, or you know, you see deflation in wages and deflation in jobs. So it's sort of the worst of both worlds. But you cannot print your way to prosperity. It's just not going to happen. The effects of that printing will land somewhere, and it most likely will land on top of the middle class and people, you know, in poverty, below the poverty line, and how much they have to spend every day on particular items that they need.
Is stagflation, Brandon, what we experienced in the 70s during Jimmy Carter, and the inflation and the price of gold and silver skyrocketing?
That's what it was, right? That's one of the effects, yes, and that's why I always tell people that the precious metals are a good option.
Yeah. Final email for you. I don't believe we will ever be totally cashless, writes an emailer. Why? Because criminals need to deal with cash, and a good amount of criminals are actually in the government, in the CIA, etc.
Well, if they control the system, then there's really no need for them to hide anything. They don't need cash to hide what they're doing. They can simply hide it through controlling the system. You would never know if criminals were digitally transferring between each other. You know, they can simply hide their trail whenever they want. I don't think that the criminal, a criminal, say like a drug dealer, is not no comparison to the criminals that are in Washington, D.C. or in global institutions like the IMF. Hmm.
Well, Mr. Smith, you're a very interesting fellow to talk to. Thank you for spending some time with it. We appreciate it. It was nice having you on the show. Tell folks what they'll find on your website.
Sure, yeah. They can visit me at alt-market.com. That's alt-market.com, and I write on a variety of subjects, mostly economics and political analysis. Mm-hmm. So they can check me out there.
Brandon Smith, thanks a lot for being here. It was an honor to have you on the show. Fun.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Brandon Smith, altmarket.com. Patrick Timpone. Somehow we lost our audio feed, and I don't know why, but we're still on Facebook and YouTube, and we'll have the complete... Well, we're about wrapping up anyway. All right, kids, we're going to take tomorrow off, Thursday, take a little day off and get some writing projects done, and we will see you back on Friday, with Open Phone Friday. Hopefully we'll have actually a phone. It may just be Open Email Friday, because our 800 number is not happening, is not happy camper. So thanks a lot. I appreciate your ongoing support. Let me know if I can do anything. Patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Patrick@oneradionetwork.com. I love you all very much. Thanks a lot. And may the blessings be. See you Friday.
We are listener supported. One Radio Network.